The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Our custom in Boundless Way is to sit in Zazen posture during the Taisho and just to let the talk wash over you. David and I will be sharing the talk, and then we'll have a Dharma dialogue. We chose for this sesshin a koan that we hope will resonate with you in one of infinite possible ways. This koan is from the collection The Blue Cliff Record. It's number 46. It is Jing Ching's Voice of Raindrops. And I'll read the koan first. Jing Ching asked a monk, "What is that sound outside?" "Dripping rain," replied the monk. Jing Ching said, "Ordinary people are upside down, falling into delusion about themselves and pursuing things outside themselves." The monk asks, "What about yourself?" And Jing Ching says, "I am on the brink of falling into delusion about myself." The monk asks, "What do you mean on the brink of falling into delusion about yourself?" And Jing Ching said, "To attain the world of emptiness may not be so difficult, but to express the bare substance is hard." So just a little background. Jing Ching was a master who taught in China in the 10th century. And he was known for putting pointed questions to his students. And there are infinite stories of him approaching a student and asking a sudden question. And we often teach that we want to try to become each part of the koan as we feel our way into it. So the first thing we see is this great teacher reaching out to this, I imagine, young monk. Quite a generous act. Often we have stories of teachers waiting to be asked by the student, but Jing Ching starts it off with an invitation. "What's this?" And the monk says, "Dripping rain." I have this vision of this timid little monk being a deer in the headlights. And the monk answers with the first thing that comes to mind, the first thing from the world of form. "It's just this. It's just dripping rain out there." But he declines to engage this Roshi in the Roshi's invitation to go deeper. Many of us do that. We receive invitations all day long from the universe, not just from our teachers, saying, "Look, look, really look at what's there." And mostly we punt, we pass it by. I found a poem that Dogen wrote that speaks to this very koan. He writes, "Because the mind is free, listening to the rain dripping from the eaves, The drops become one with me. The drops become one with me. So this poor young monk doesn't get there, but he asks Jing Qing, what about you? Kind of a bold question. And Jing Qing first says, ordinary people are upside down, falling into delusions about themselves and pursuing things outside themselves. And of course, we are ordinary people. We are constantly pursuing things outside of ourselves, pursuing that next thing that will finally make everything all right, that will finally make us good and whole. Whether it's some material possession or some relationship or some fantasy of enlightenment, something to get out there. And Jing Qing is lamenting, ordinary people are upside down, falling into delusion about themselves. And then the monk asks, well, what about you? What about you, Roshi? And Jing Qing gives a very intimate reply. He says, I am on the brink of falling into delusion about myself. I am on the brink. But there's another translation that I particularly like, in which when the monk asks the question, Jing Qing responds, I almost don't lose myself. Almost don't lose myself. But I do. I, the Roshi, the supposedly enlightened, realized being, I lose myself too. And of course, what Dogen teaches us and what we read about this morning is that we are always deluded, and that the practice is to greatly realize this. There's a wonderful image that Dogen brings that many of you have heard. He writes, when you ride in a boat and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. But when you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. Similarly, if you examine myriad things with a confused body and mind, you might suppose that your mind and nature are permanent. When you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has unchanging self. And so when we begin each home practice, we cheer you on saying, observe intimately, observe. Keep going with this dangerous, subversive practice in which everything we think is true isn't quite true, is something different, or is many things at once. That unchanging me goes through so many changes just in the course of eating my breakfast. That unchanging tree has so much to tell us about impermanence, if only we take the time to look. This image of being on the brink is a particularly vivid one. Jing Qing tells his monk, I am on the brink of falling into delusion What is this brink? This brink that we are all on. This brink, and we can get lost in the trivia, in the everydayness of our lives, in the, well, it's just the sound of dripping rain, and ignore the depth and the vastness of what's right here. But this brink where we can also get lost in emptiness, in oneness, where nothing matters, all the same, no need to worry, no need to care. Just dwell in emptiness. Both of those pits we can fall into. And this brink is where we sit when we are almost not deluded. This is the brink between the world of the 10,000 things and the world of emptiness, nothingness. And this is the brink where we invite you to play and practice and investigate. And this is the brink where I'm going to invite David Roshi to take us further in this talk.
So I almost don't fall into delusion about myself. I almost understand what we're doing here. I almost can live my life. This almost, or this brink, or this edge, is life itself. Our language creates positions and objects and specifies relationship and point of view. But as we enter into this ancient stream of practice, these old stories handed down to us over generations of practitioners like you and like me have turned their intention, turned their heart in this direction of awakening. And as Bob Sensei said at the beginning, this is important. I think perhaps as we get older, we see how little we control in the universe. The percentage of the universe that is in my direct control is quite small, only 70 or 80%. No, I wish, huh? Not even a fraction of 1%, this vast universe, this tiny planet, this tiny blue-green planet revolving around a rather mediocre star in a galaxy that is just one galaxy in a universe beyond imagination. And yet we humans here so briefly have this opportunity and have these fundamental choices a moment after moment. I think the wonderful thing about being human is that the past is fully here and the future is fully here. And in this moment, this is the truth happening place. This is the life happening place, and we can speak about it as an edge, the thin edge between past and future. But it is also infinitely broad and spacious. This present moment, infinitely forgiving, infinitely available. The teachers that we encounter are infinite, sometimes embodied in a person, but embodied in every sound, every sensation, every thought. There is nothing that is separate from this great Buddha nature. And we say form and emptiness as if we knew what we were talking about. But when we move in close, and this is the invitation, this is the teacher's invitation to the student. What is that sound outside? What is that sound? This great inquiry, this great turning of our minds to an investigation of experience. In some ways, this invitation to un-upside down ourselves, to free ourselves from the delusion of certainty. We say greed, anger, and ignorance are the three poisons. Greed and anger, greed, I want more, anger, I want less. Ignorance, sometimes just kind of the foggy dullness, but also we say ignorance is delusive certainty. And this delusive certainty that arises in all of us, and most strongly in my experience, in my opinion about myself, as I encounter the 10,000 joys and sorrows of my life, there are places I come back to that are so familiar, that seem like some kind of truth, and for many of us, these places are quite discouraging. Well, the truth is that I really am separate, or the truth is I really don't know what I'm doing. There's a great familiarity in some of these places. And though we may complain and wish we were anywhere else, there is some comfort in the certainty. And in our practice, we are encouraged to leave home, to leave, become a home leaver. We are all wandering monks. And for these 3 days together, we have all run away and joined the monastery and are living a life dedicated to awakening, and have simplified our lives, have put other things on hold. We have left the world, in a sense, left it right where we are, in order to encounter something beyond the construction of the mind. Okamura said in the reading that the world we encounter is the world that we construct. The world you encounter is not out there, but the world is you. The self and the world create each other, and the teacher says, what is that sound? What is that sensation? What is that experience. What is this sound? What is this? Does the sound arise from the outside or from the inside? If you say it's the sound of the passing car, you are lost in the world of separateness. And in this world of separateness, there is a delusion and there is awakening, and you better try really hard to get awakening and get out of your delusion. As we practice over time, and whether just a 125-minute period or over several months or several years or many decades, get lost and we find our way, and we get lost and we find our way. And there is a gradual, I think. We talk about sudden awakening, or we imagine sudden awakening, and this happens moment after moment, but also this gradual wearing down, where we try so hard to find something we don't have. We try so hard to be someone we think we should be, and slowly we begin to see it's just not possible. It's just not possible. My teacher used to say, life is basically unworkable. And in this impossibility of being someone else, in this impossibility of having something else, we begin to make our home. Having left the home of certainty, or been thrown out of the home of certainty by events in our life, in our inner psyche, we begin to find our home in letting things be. And we begin to find our home in delusion and awakening. Clear seeing, muddled seeing, separate and together are not two different things. And so I almost don't fall into delusion about myself. Almost is everything. This wonderfully inclusive Dharma that demands nothing, that is not outside you to run after, that is not inside you to attain, as Lin Shi said. Already here, already manifesting. So let me read this case one more time. Qing Jing asked a monk, what sound is that outside the gate? And the monk said, the sound of raindrops. Qing said, ordinary people are upside down. They lose themselves and follow after things. The monk said, what about you, teacher? Qing said, I almost don't lose myself. I too am on the brink of falling into delusion about myself. The monk said, what is the meaning of I almost don't lose myself? Qing said, though it is to attain the world of emptiness may not be so difficult, but to express the bare substance is hard. Thank you.
So please make yourselves comfortable. This is the time for our Dharma dialogue. So we'll be calling on you, and Bob and David and I will be doing our best to respond to you or work with you around whatever is arising for you, maybe connected to this koan, maybe connected to being at the Sheen, maybe connected to your practice, and remembering that talking about your own koan or anything that happened in Doksan is off limits. Everything else is very welcome. So let's start with Paul.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, David. Really appreciated the talk. A few things resonated with me. And I think first and foremost, just this word almost. I see that this is something that comes up again and again in my practice. This almost, you know, I'm almost useful. I'm almost the worst Zen student. and it has this quality that, you know, it feels like there's some progression. There is, at least for me, that, you know, some energy behind it. But this almost, you know, kind of gets in this evaluative, judgmental quality that instantly becomes a barrier for me as well. And just to see the almost, just as almost, the delusive certainty of I'm almost the worst Zen student, and just be the worst Zen student. So, yeah. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, Paul, thank you. From the glass half full perspective, your almost means that you don't say to yourself, I am the worst Zen student. I know I'm the worst Zen student, right? So talk about holding your delusion a little more lightly. That almost could be a sign of hope.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you. Priska, welcome.
Thank you. I noticed when I was listening to both times, I'm so tired and my mind is wandering. So I just heard the last sentence.
Good.
But it was meaningful to me. So it was how I heard it to me was like to express the essence is the most difficult. And that resonated with me because I've been trying to working with my cone, which I will not say, but just this like sitting with that, I have a sense of an answer, but I have no idea how to express it. So that's been very interesting. And I was happy to hear it in this koan.
It's so wonderful, Priska. I really appreciate you following Bob's instructions, which came at the very beginning, to sit in Zazen. And you said it so beautifully, Bob, let the talk flow.
Wash over you,
right? So wash over you doesn't mean that you heard everything exactly, but you let it touch you. You let it, you know, I think of a wave washing over the shore, and then it leaves behind a couple of stones. And this was the stone. This was the one. And it's so relevant. Not all of us are working with koans, but those of us who are know this, this feeling of, I get it, but I don't know how to show it. I just don't know how to embody it. And even if we're not working specifically on koans, you might say, I get the teachings, I get it, but I don't know how to live it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Yeah. And so, so beautifully said, so beautifully received, Priska. Exactly so, yeah.
And if I could just add, first, Priska, I'm sorry you didn't memorize every word that I said, but I'll live with that. But you know, one of the things you said was that you don't know how to express it, but as Melissa was pointing to, you are likely living it even when you can't see it. You are what you know deep down, you live. And so sometimes the feeling of can't express is our mind, our busy mind saying, I don't know how to say this, I don't know how to put this, and yet you come forward and you live it.
Thank you
Priska. Bill.
Yes, hi, thank you for the talk. the word almost gives me permission to be a human being. It gives me permission to make mistakes as if I could never stop making mistakes. Right. That was one of my first thoughts. And my second thought is, my, what a gift Jing Jing is giving to us all us students here. You know, it gets us away from thinking that he does have it completely together, as you said in your talk, that he's a Roshi and he must have it all solved, all figured out. I need to be like him. But really, I need to be like me and continue to make mistakes.
Yeah,
maybe less so, but continue making them.
Or maybe more so.
You just really gives me permission.
Yeah, and I think that's so important. And I think we say it over and over in Zen because there are some writings and some images that make it seem like there's some escape. And if only we're good enough, it will be different. But this wonderful practice that has no beginning and no end, we say. If mistakes get included, if mistakes are a resource, then most of us are quite wealthy. Inexhaustible opportunity. Thanks.
Thank you. Crystal.
Hello. The session was started smoothly for me. So being and not doing anything, not planning anything, was really nice. So I had something like, okay, I'm coming home and it's okay. And then just a few hours ago, I had a discussion with my partner and it switched. And then I was thinking all the time about the discussion. And later on, I was realizing that all the good things are flowing away and I don't pay attention anymore to them. And just my brain is going to the discussion and what was wrong and how. When David said the words, infinite forgiveness, it's like something relaxing in me. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but yeah.
You know, this is a very subtle teaching that Bob and David have been pointing to and that people are receiving, that everything is it. Mm-hmm. So mistakes are it. Mistakes are the Dharma manifesting as mistakes. You know, the Dharma is another way of talking about reality. And so the reality of you and your partner having that argument and then you carrying it with you into your mind because, gosh, nobody does that. That's so unusual. But no, it's very, very common, right? We just ruminate. The rumination is it too. Okay. That's just as valuable as the moment of release, which also comes when we stop meddling, when we just receive whatever is arising as reality itself. Then, yeah, we can actually perceive these moments of release. That are happening all the time. Mistake, clarity, wrong, yes, all the time. So wonderful noticing of that moment. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks.
Joanne.
Yes, thank you. Those were beautiful talks. And I found myself crying and the end of Bob's and when David started, I just was just really taken, you know, by emotion. And I think that there is such a strong sense that my mind takes me to be outside of things. That I'm outside of how it should be.
Yeah.
And I'm wrong. And I'll always be wrong. And
and I have is that agreement from the dog or protesting from the dog?
It's rarely here, but And just this, like listening to Bob and then David's first words of, you know, just repeating as if it were true for you, you know, that you almost don't, I forget the words. You almost don't lose yourself is very, very, very generous, and it gives me no escape, which I really appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah, so these moments when it touches our heart, when the teachings make it through all the barriers we've set up through the labyrinth of the mind that is so certain. Joanne, I love how clearly you talk about that certainty that arises, that I am outside of this. And so to allow ourselves to feel that, to feel the pain of that, is part of including that. So even that one who feels she is excluded is included. We don't have to convince her of anything. And that is good news. As the dog barks, he knows this already. She knows this already. And just giving her assent to you and to all of us.
Yeah. Thanks. You. Maria.
Well, after declaring my goal for this retreat, which was
what was it? Maria, I didn't hear. Well,
it was to be clear, right? To have a clear mind.
Yeah. Pay attention to what I'm doing. I went downstairs after the morning and I thought, oh, it's so cold. I'm going to make oatmeal. So I said to my husband, shall I make a portion for you? He said, yeah. So I measure it, I put it in, I'm stirring, and it's done. And I'm like, that's an awfully small portion. I forgot that you have to put two quarter cup.
Yeah, yeah.
And I only put one. I thought, I can't believe this. Even when I try. But there is a good ending to this, because I went into David, who was in his office, and I said, David, I failed with the oatmeal. And he was just, he was so sweet. He goes, that's all right. I said, eat granola, okay, this morning. He said, I
know. Oh, beautiful.
I didn't really feel that guilty. I think I'm incorporating, this is who I am. I make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah. Well, how wonderful. I mean, even the mistake of saying I'm not going to make any mistakes. It's great. Just to be more and more, the practice makes us more and more generous, not just to the world, but to ourselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, all of you there.
Thank you, Maria. Paul.
Thank you for both of you gentlemen for just a great talk. I'm going to paraphrase the lines of knowing but not knowing how to explain it. I'm kind of at the opposite of that. I can read the teachings and hear the teachings, and they're all metaphors for something. And do I really know what that something is? Do I really, you know, that... and that's kind of where I am now, where I hear the words and I read the words and the teachings, and if I strip away, what is their real meaning? They're just words, and trying to dive be under the words or through the words to their real meaning.
Yes.
And that's kind of where I'm at these days.
You know, Paul, that's a wonderful point. I mean, you make me think of the image we often use of the difference between reading a menu and tasting the food. Mm-hmm. What you're describing is reading a lot of menus, and that's good. And certainly reading is one way into learning the Dharma. but tasting the food is what you've signed up to do here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's what the invitation is for all of us.
And that's what I'm striving in my practice. That's, can I really express all these things in, you know, because there is no words to explain them. It's a knowing, it's not explaining.
Well, and I like what you say, Paul, that it can be fun to, we can explain this to our friends and our partners, but likely they will not be so impressed. But how do we embody it? So not just when you go into Doksan or in some special moment, but in our Zazen, how do you express your great love for the life without moving or saying a word? And here's where we really get into practice.
And it's very important to make a distinction. You know, these are all translations from Chinese, but express doesn't mean talk about it, blab on about it. There's no equal sign between express and explain. It's show, demonstrate, be. That's what we're looking for with all of our students. Show up as it. Don't blab on. Although sometimes words are it too, but not as a substitute, right? It's not the menu. It's the taste of the food itself and the demonstration that you have eaten it and digested it and shat it out. And now, who are you? Yeah. That's the whole thing right there. Yeah.
You used the word it three times. What is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Linji, in our reading, Linji was pointing to it when he talked about your wonderful function. Mm. That's what Melissa's saying, that we live it out, we embody it. The reality of just this, we live it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Eddie.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, David, for the talk. So I'll join the club. The only thing that washed over me was learning from the trees. And I got an early hike yesterday morning, and the last time I did this trail, there was this a skag, which is like a dead tree broken in half, and it was still standing. Well, yesterday when I went, it was no longer standing, it was laying down, and mushrooms were growing out of it, and it was decomposing, and it was going into the soil, and I had to ask myself, tree, mushroom, dirt, what, you know, it was everything. Was it dead? Was it alive? You know, it was more alive than, it was just fascinating. About a week ago, Alan did a talk about this, finding the mother tree, and he's got me hooked on this book about mushrooms, and I'm checking out all the mushrooms, and it's just so fascinating how everything is just so intertwined, and then it just goes, it just continues on, and that's us too, I believe. So thank you.
Well, and wonderful demonstration of a tree broken in half falls to the ground and fulfills its life in the next step by decomposing, giving itself to the world. Yeah. Thanks, Eddie.
So we'll just take a couple more. Sarah.
Thank you both for the talk, and thank you to all of you for your enriching comments. I think, you know, one of the interesting things that I find myself striving for is always, you know, okay, so it's, this is it, and I'm living my life, and my life is it. And this, I mentioned yesterday, this is my first session. So this morning my partner woke up at some point, you know, right after our first session, and you know, his day was just starting, and you know, immediately we sort of got into a verbal conflict. And you know, I have been in a heightened state of noticing that this is still it, right? And it is, I think about what will the teachers say if I were to talk about you know, verbal conflict. And, you know, on the one hand, there's the, okay, so the verbal conflict is it. And then we talk about wanting to save all beings. And we talk about wanting to, you know, realize that we're not separate and we're not apart. And so I think we talk about this aspirational thing. And then in reality is this other thing. And yet I don't imagine that a teacher would say the conflict is not it, because the conflict is it too. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but I guess where, you know, then there's the judgment and the disappointment of, oh, there's a verbal conflict, and there's the apology, and there's the, you know, owning of the behavior and the kind of moving on. And maybe that's a, you know, maybe that's, you know, noticing all that and making sure that's happening is part of it, but it's just very confusing.
But, you know, it's not that different from what Crystal was talking about. So it's the conflict that's it. And it, that is the Dharma, that is reality, whatever word you want to use. It's also the clarification in your own heart about what's happening. It's the apology, it's the reconciliation. It's one thing after the other. And to notice that, you know, it reminds me of Eddie's tree, the transformation from moment to moment. It's still the tree, it's still the relationship, it's still you know, the bigger picture of it all, but it changes, things happen and they come and go. So our job is not to go from one state to another because one state is better than another or worse than another. It's to just notice that fluidity. Mm. That's a big deal. And it's you know, so, and we do get, I think this koan is so great because Jingqing is really awake to this, that this, and of course awake to all of his students just wanting to be enlightened and get it over with. My teacher used to say, you know, you get enlightened and then you're done, you move to Florida. Although he wouldn't say that if he was alive now, I'm pretty sure. but this quality of thinking, I just, you know, I wanted to stop and then I'll be happy and awake and enlightened and wise and calm all the time. Equanimity is really this capacity to be with the fluidity. So thank you, Sarah. And let's take Adam for our last comment or question.
Yeah, I almost know what I want to say. I guess really, as everyone was talking, I was struck by this notion of it's really hard for us to express, you know, or demonstrate or show this thing, this it, while simultaneously just watching it express itself over and over and over again in a pretty effortless way. It just really struck me that, we think it's very hard to express this, but it actually expresses itself without our involvement. So just a real appreciation.
Maybe a wonderful way to end. And as Bob said, maybe you're expressing it without knowing it. So this wondrous functioning, and as Sarah so beautifully said, I don't quite get it. Right? You know, how can this be one thing and the other? But just allowing this possibility, it is so important to clarify and align and live this fully, not just blab on about it. And we are already aligned, expressing it, living it fully right here.
Yes, you might say that the work is to know it, to know that. So thank you all so much. Thank you, Bob and David, for the wonderful talk. And let's get back into our Zazen posture for a few moments.